Another year has gone rocketing by, and we're almost ready for 2024. And while most of the news we hear these days is pretty grim, and most of the stories we bring you don't have happy endings, we want to look at the other side of the coin. This week, we look at life sunny side up. We delve into the progress being made on issues of concern. We talk with people who are part of the solution, and we take a moment to embrace all the positives, because there's a lot out there to be positive about. Fox 11 News In Depth starts right now. Hello, everyone. I'm Hal Eisner, and this is Fox 11 News In Depth. As we look back over the past 11 months, some of our favorite stories this year involved people putting their focus on our human need for connection, for healthy food, and for a green and pleasant environment. We start off with the story of a project intended to improve the lives of schoolchildren.
The Trust for Public Land is a national nonprofit organization, and our mission is really to ensure that everyone has access to green space, park space, within a 10-minute walk of their home. And we do that in many different ways. One of the ways that we're doing that across the country and in Los Angeles is to green our public school campuses. We want to make schoolyards oases, as you said, for children so they can thrive. We want to design them and support school districts to design them so there is increased shade canopy, so the schoolyards aren't as hot, where there's more permeable space so we can manage stormwater, and where kids really have opportunities, a diversity of opportunities to play and learn outside, because we know that kids, their behavior is better, their school attendance is better, their test scores are better when they have opportunities to get outside and move their bodies and really release some stress and tension.
You recently got a sizable grant or some kind of funding to be able to make a local school, an elementary school, greener. Where does this money come from? And you've just explained sort of what it is you do with that money.
Yes. So we're very fortunate to have received a grant from the California Natural Resources Agency through their Urban Greening Grant Program. This is state money. This is public money. It actually originates from a carbon tax that large companies pay into to get credits for their emissions. And so we're using that money that they've paid into to actually build some resilience on the ground.
Let's look at some video here. There's some video we have of a school in Oakland that was transformed. What did your organization do there? It's more than just planting trees, right?
Oh, absolutely. We're talking about a comprehensive renovation of these campuses. Tree planting is only one aspect of the work to cool down the campus. We're talking about removing asphalt. And again, that asphalt removal is really important because that tends to be the hottest part of the campus. And yet those are the places where we've given children to play and be outside, is these giant asphalt fields. And so, as you can see in this image, we removed some of that asphalt. We've planted it with native plants. We've added vegetable gardens. We've added tree and shade canopy, and really giving kids other opportunities to spend time outside beyond, the asphalt that you need for basketball or tetherball or something.
Another project we showcased was involving college students who found a way to link farms with an excess of produce and food banks in need. They called it FarmLink.
In April of 2020, when we were all sent home due to the pandemic, a handful of students and myself, we kept reading article after article about farmers facing massive surpluses as the commercial food industry shut down, and at the same time, food banks facing the longest lines they ever saw. And so we set out with a simple goal of, let's connect one of these farms to one of these food banks.
And as we look at the video right on the monitor now, you see onions, and you have amassed an extraordinary number of onions and bananas and apples. And I want to hear all about that, but we talk often about food insecurity on this program. So what is it that students are thinking about when you're eating and you're thinking about those who aren't?
Sure. I mean, that's a good question. We can get into the food waste and the food loss in a moment, but at its core, I think looking at this from the lens of a college student, one third of college students face some form of food insecurity. And it is a problem that many have the privilege of not having to think about on a daily basis, but it affects so many more of the people around us than you otherwise may realize.
So a couple of you got together and you...
We got together remotely because it was April of 2020. So we used Zoom and FaceTime, and we started calling these farmers that we were reading articles about. We called and called, and we probably called 200 farmers before finally getting through to someone who had just been written about for having a pile of 2 million pounds of onions with nowhere to go.
That 2 million pounds of onions.
He had dug a huge ditch and was just burying them. And he said, if you get a truck here, you can take whatever you can. And that's what we did.
And so this kind of launched things?
Oh, hugely. I mean, at the same time, we connected with an egg farmer who said, I have 11,000 eggs, come pick them up. And so in back-to-back days, we pooled together some money and we paid to have a truck pick up about 40,000 pounds of onions from that onion farm. And at the same time, two of my co-founders actually rented a U-Haul and went and picked up those eggs themselves.
Well, part of it is about the transportation of the produce and the eggs and the this and the that. And was it hard to get people who had big trucks to help? Yeah, because a U-Haul isn't going to get a million onions, right?
No, and I want to be clear, we don't have students driving food today. That was a proof of concept and probably one of the more reckless ones we could have figured out. The reality is we're working with third-party logistics companies. So in the same way you might book an Uber from point A to point B, that's what we're doing with people who have 40-foot-long refrigerated trucks all around the country.
Now, you've been doing this for what amounts to about 2.5 years.
Three and a half as of right about now.
Well, 2020,
yeah.
That's right.
Exactly.
So 3.5 years. You were 21 when this started.
I was just about to turn 22. So, and like so many students, I think our average age for those first couple of years of FarmLink was 20, 21.
Yeah, but at that age, did you have trouble being taken seriously?
That's a good question. Yes. In many ways, we had to earn a form of credibility. And in some ways, I think that was just, you know, there are farmers who've been doing this for hundreds of years, people who've worked in food banks for decades. And we were just doing our best to help, but especially at the start of the pandemic, you had a lot of people that were just saying, all right, kids, you know, stay at home, stay safe, but leave it to us.
There was one farmer who in particular took you seriously.
Yeah, you know what, there are a few. I mean, especially early on, that onion farmer I was telling you about, Shea Myers.
Myers is what I'm talking about.
Exactly, and he was the one who had just been written about in that article, and he gave us a chance. And
In the New York Times article.
Exactly.
About you guys,
and that actually catapulted us because one of my teammates, Jordan, she actually reached back out to the writer from the New York Times and said, hey, just so you know, we're a bunch of kids and here's what we did with your article. And they wrote a follow-up piece. So 3 weeks in, we have really no idea what this next step is going to look like. And suddenly we're on national news.
So how much, and now you're on local news, but how much produce, how much fruit, how much stuff have you moved?
So we have recovered to date nearly 150 million pounds of fresh and healthy produce and delivered that to communities around actually North America, but really largely throughout the United States.
That's extraordinary.
Thank you.
A couple of fascinating projects here. Coming up next on Fox 11 News In Depth, we turn our eyes to the skies and meet some people who really deserve to be looked up to. We'll be right back after this break. Don't go away. Welcome back to Fox 11 News In Depth. We have more stories for you of inspiration and dedication. Let's start with a group of retired Navy SEALs who have a new mission to raise funds for the families of fallen military members and first responders. My colleague, Marla Tejas, picks up the story.
The second you stop chasing things is the second you stop growing.
Growth, adventure, inspiration, redemption, they're all things many of us aspire to, but may need help achieving. It is the example of heroes among us who can lead us to heights we didn't know were possible.
Nick, you formed Legacy with two buddies that you serve with, both retired Navy SEALs. What inspired you three to do so?
It was an opportunity for us to be able to do something and do a series of events that were really extreme and got a lot of attention so we could bring awareness to the fallen and be able to carry on the legacy of the fallen and tell their story. So we figured that if we were able to do something that gets a lot of attention, it's borderline obnoxious and extreme, that it would get a lot of publicity and kind of, what are these guys doing and who are they? And so it gets an opportunity for us to tell a little bit about us, but more significantly, it gives us the opportunity to tell the story about our brothers and sisters in arms that we lost during combat operations over the past 20 plus years.
Okay.
And so that was our reason.
Yeah, because you could have just, you know, organized a 5K, climbed a mountain. No, you instead decide that you want to skydive. And so let's talk a little bit about the missions. You founded Legacy Expeditions in 2021, and it all started with jumping out of a plane from the highest points in the Mount Everest region, right?
Yes, correct. So it was sort of like to, once again, to try to capture this awe-inspiring scene and then tell an awe-inspiring story that one complemented the other.
And we're looking at some of this video, and I know in 2022, your expedition was to jump basically across Iceland. And then this year, as mentioned, you did the 7 skydives on 7 continents in 7 days. You all are superhuman. This is all tied to, though, you've chosen a nonprofit to raise money for, because this is all about raising money for your fallen and also first responders, which is very commendable. So let's talk more about Folds of Honor. What is it?
So Folds of Honor is a 501c3 nonprofit organization that provides education, scholarship, and education benefits to the dependents of fallen or 100% disabled veterans and first responders. And so the premise, overall premise behind the mission of Folds of Honor is to further educate the kids, the dependents, the spouses that were left behind, to try to really shape the culture in our society, to try to make them leaders of America tomorrow.
The Compton Airport has a hidden gem. Tomorrow's Aeronautic Museum, founded by pilot Robin Petgrave, is more than just a display of aerial history. It's a living classroom and a place for dreams to take flight. Take a look.
It tells kids about the history of aviation as far as African Americans' contribution to aviation. We start off with the, you know, Bessie Coleman, and we talk about the Tuskegee Airmen, and we bring them all the way
to
the future.
There's just all kinds of things in here.
Oh, yeah, we bring them all the way to the future. I've built like a mini rocket lab here where
well,
kids.
Let's do this. Let's take a look. Let's go over this way.
Oh, absolutely.
Now, where we are right now is just a great big hangar, but you got all kinds of things in this place that are historical, that are interactive, like right over here, right?
Oh, yes.
So yeah. Tell me about this.
These are F-16 simulators. All of them are networked together so people can get in them, and they have missiles and guns. And
that's kind of cool. So it's kind of like video games at home, but you're not.
Exactly. And then what that does is it whets their appetite to want to learn more about it, like how did we get here? So then you can take them over and show them cool stuff like the
Let's take a look at that cool thing, yeah.
Oh yeah, this is a mini P-51 Mustang. It's in the same paint scheme as the P-51 Mustang that Lee Archer flew in the Battle of Berlin when the first German fighter came down and tried to shoot him down, and then the Tuskegee Airmen didn't know what it was, but they went up and shot it down anyways. And this one is really great because this one's autographed by one of the original Tuskegee Airmen, Otis Cowley, we call him Big O, and by Lawrence Fishburne, who starred in that first movie about the Tuskegee Airmen. So it's got a lot of history, and this is the only place you will find this with that combination of signatures.
What do you want to be when you grow up?
I want to be a pilot when I get older.
Why?
I just love aviation. I mean, it's something that every kid dreams of.
Yeah, but what is it about aviation? I would tell you that not every kid dreams of that, because I didn't.
Yeah, I like aviation because it's always been a dream of mine. I like to be able to fly and experience the world from above.
But what was the kernel in your brain that said, ooh, this would be really cool?
I mean, I'm not sure. I started getting into aviation on my first airplane. Then I was like, oh, I got to do this. It was something that it sparked my interest.
So it was the experience?
Yeah, it was my first experience that started it.
Is that very typical?
Yeah, and that's why a lot of the kids come down when we have airfares. Kids come to the airport. Sometimes we'll have 9,000 kids on the airport, and we have these introductory flights, right? And there's another organization called the Young Eagles. They go around the country giving kids introduction flight because it's very visceral. Once a kid goes up and does it, that part of your brain that decides that this is the thing you got to be doing for the rest of your life, it gets excited, and that changes your whole life.
Love these stories. Coming up next on Fox 11 News in Depth, a veterinary service that helps the pets of people struggling with their finances and a group of disabled dogs that share their love and enthusiasm with humans who could use a little more of it. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Fox 11 News In Depth. It's no secret that money is tight for a lot of people, and it can be a real struggle when love is just not enough to heal the sick or injured pet. We talked to one of the founders of Free Animal Doctor about what they're doing to help. How you doing, baby? There you go. Nice to see you, too. Tell me about Princess real quick.
Princess was in the animal shelter. She had damage to both of her eyes. They were just kind of popped out, and they thought she was fully paralyzed in her rear, but she's not. She's just partially paralyzed, and she had really bad behavior, went after everybody, was very scared and hurt and painful, and we got her out and got her fixed up, and we've been working on her behavior. You see, she just took the treat.
Right. As she walks, I notice her back end really almost collapses a little bit.
Yeah, but she can stand. And
her
she's
eyes?
Continent.
Surgery on her eyes?
Yeah, she had to have them basically put back in. Her eyelids actually had to be sewn shut for 2 weeks.
Oh, my goodness.
But look at her now. She's great.
Now, your organization can become quite a lifeline for desperate pet owners.
Yes.
And tell us a little bit about how that works.
So, Free Animal Doctor, we help people raise the money they need when they can't afford some or all of the care. And what we're doing is we're trying to help people keep their pets, not put them in the animal shelter, not give them up. You can just go to our website, freeanimaldoctor.org. If you need help, click on Submit a Campaign, and we can help you get funding for your animal.
We're oftentimes, the organizations develop because there's a void.
Right. Yes, that's right.
Void here?
Well, yeah. There's a lot of people, and the problem that a lot of people have found, there's like GoFundMe and these type of resources, but they're not good at using them to raise money. And so we really help them do that to get the funding that they need for their pet.
So crowdsourcing.
Yes, exactly.
And do you do a lot of that crowdsourcing
yes,
to help
that's the whole
all
foundation.
These different animals?
We've raised about $1.5 million.
No kidding.
For almost 1,000 animals that have needed help. Yeah.
For over how long a period of time?
7 years now. But the first few years, we were quite small and slow in operating. This year, I think we're going to do about $500,000 in donations.
And we talk about different things with regard to the health of animals. It's not just eye surgery or the hips. It's dental as well.
I'm glad you mentioned that. We hope to open our own nonprofit hospital or clinic. We have a small one now that does spay and neuter mostly, a few other minor procedures. And we see a lot of people. We're helping a man right now. His dog needs dental work. He rescued this dog. He found it on the street, brought it in, had it for a couple of years. Breath got bad, takes it to the vet, say, this dog needs its teeth taken out. And, you know, that can become a very serious thing. They can actually get sepsis and die from infections in the teeth. And this man's on Social Security, fixed income. And so he asks for the estimate. I give him an estimate of $4,500. Well, when you're on a fixed income, you're not going to reach that, right? It's just not going to happen. So he contacted us. The first thing, we found another vet willing to do it much cheaper, $1,500. And we've raised the money, and that dog goes in on June 8th.
So you become an advocate.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And if we had our own nonprofit clinic for low-income people like that, we could be doing these for $200-$300, and if they can't even afford that, we could be paying for it. So that's also on our website, freeanimaldoctor.org. We're really hoping to open this nonprofit clinic. We've got the land for it. The land has been donated to us.
And that would be where?
It's in Arcadia.
Okay.
The Stronach Group of the Santa Anita Racetrack, they've donated the land for the clinic already. We've got all the permits. We're ready to go. We're just working on a little funding to get some structures and, some of the equipment, x-ray machines. Project is underway.
All right, very
work
in progress.
Like this. Work in progress.
And we talked to a woman with a pack of disabled dogs who specialize in bringing hope and inspiration to those who need it.
Well, Dream Fetchers is an organization. We do a lot of different things. We have a rescue division, but we also have an outreach program. And the outreach program is what I'm heavily involved in. And that outreach program now has evolved over the years to using my pack of disabled dogs to inspire and bring hope to individuals that need it, whether they be, you know, children with disabilities, adults with disabilities, just everyday people that might need some hope. These dogs provide that.
Where do these dogs come from?
You know, the dogs are rescued from some of them from all over the world.
And who takes care of them?
Well, I take care of all of them.
All of them?
So, yes. So I take care of every single one. And they've all come from, like I said, as far as Egypt, And yeah, they're just amazing, amazing dogs. They just have been through a lot in their lifetime, but they give back so much more, and they inspire and have been bringing hope to so many people.
They're support dogs. They're there to be supportive in so many ways. And when you say all of them, how many is all of them that you have?
Well, we've got six, and we just brought in Stevie, this little cutie. He's our newest little unstoppable dog. And, you know, these unstoppable dogs are the ambassadors to my organization. They're the voice to what we do, and they shine in every way.
We saw some video of them working with the Easter Seals organization earlier this year. What makes dogs so special in these efforts? And talk about that Easter Seals connection for us.
Well, the Easter Seals, we started working with the Easter Seals this year, and it's been a wonderful, wonderful experience. The organization is amazing, and these dogs have been able to come into different Easter Seals around Southern California, and they just bring so much joy to the people that are there, and they just have such a great time. The dogs get a chance to interact one-on-one with all the people that are there. And we just kind of let them loose into the space, and the dogs just do what they do best. And that's just give love to everybody. And then I think a lot of the individuals that come to the Easter Seals, they feel inspired, and they see these dogs never give up, and they keep pushing forward, and it gives them that hope to do the same thing.
A lot of good work from a lot of good people. We'll be back with more Fox 11 News in depth right after this. And finally, if you want to hear an audio version of this program, check out my podcast. It's called What the Hal, and it's available wherever you subscribe to podcasts, or just go to whatthehalpodcast.com. That's it for this week's Fox 11 News in depth. Thanks so much for joining us. Have a great week, everybody. And thank you to all of you for sharing this year with us. As we go, another bright spot from this year, an art project that turns metro stations and even buses into art museums. See you next time. Bye-bye.